White Rocket Entertainment.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Comics with Normies. I am your host, Jared Albrick, a.k.a. The Yard Sale Artist. If you're new to the show, all we really do is take my yard sale skills and find old comic books and sort of give a random issue to a person in my life that is not a comic book person. They read that issue and then we discuss it from a complete outsider's point of view so that we insiders can kind of figure out what we look like to the outsiders. This episode's comic is Amazing Spider-Man 394, smack dab in the middle of the Clone Saga. Debbie's already laughing over there because, yeah, it's a mind-bender of an issue. This comic came out in October of 1994. Well, it's cover dated October 1994, so it probably actually came out in the summer of 1994. And we'll get into the comic in just a minute. First, let's get to know our guest. Our guest today is the very lovely and very sweet Debbie Woodham. She's a friend of mine.
Hello.
Debbie, tell us just a little bit about yourself, whatever you want the people in the podcasting community to know about you. So you might want to keep this as brief as you want or as detailed. Just tell us a little bit about yourself, Debbie.
Okay. I've worked in training for over 20 years for corporate America. Now work at Fort Rucker in training. I know very little about comics. They certainly got my attention when I was growing up, but I never really picked one up and read it. I'm incredibly intrigued by what I've read, and I don't recommend that anyone start in the middle like I did. But, you know, there's not a whole lot to know about me. I just, I'm being drawn into this, though, and that's cool.
Outside of this mind-boggling world of comic book nerdery, what kind of hobbies or interests do you have? What makes you excited the way that us comic book folks get excited?
Oh, wow. Well, I love anything colorful. So I can, and anything artistic, because I do have a creative side. So, you know, I'm drawn into it probably in similar ways that people who love comic strips are drawn into it. But I love sports. I love anything outdoors. I love anything nature-oriented, animal-oriented, including two-legged men.
Got her zinger in there.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, I just love sports, and I love creativity. And, you know, comics are very creative, so that's cool.
She's not kidding about the sports thing, folks. Debbie and I have a semi-regular racquetball date, and I have never won. I've never even come close to winning. She is very, very good at the athletics. All right, Debbie. So you mentioned that you did have obviously a small awareness about comic books. What history do you have with comics? I know you didn't really get into comics, but like, were there any comic book themed TV shows or movies that you were sort of into?
Oh, yeah.
When you were younger?
Absolutely. I love Batman.
Okay.
But I like the good Batman, not the dark Batman.
You're an Adam West Batman fan?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. He's probably my favorite. I did like Superwoman, and that was during my time. Those were probably the most popular. And in recent times, Iron Man has really gotten my attention. I like the storyline with the Iron Man. And so those were probably the ones that have drawn me in the most.
All right. Yeah, well, that Iron Man, he's definitely brought in a lot of new people to the comic book fold. That movie sort of transcended, kind of busted open the whole Marvel cinematic universe. So it's interesting that, you know, it sort of worked the way it was supposed to get somebody like Debbie.
Yep. Not,
she probably wouldn't look twice at an Iron Man comic laying around, but this movie comes out and now you're invested. Okay. So she's got a little bit of knowledge of what's going on, but she's never delved into comics. So we are going to let her delve into this issue, Amazing Spider-Man 394 from October 1994. As soon as we come back, from this quick podcast promo break.
Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, a new monthly show chronicling the adventures of the JLI era by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. We'll be going issue by issue in release order, tackling the core Justice League title, Justice League Europe, and the quarterly book. Along the way, we'll take time out for special episodes covering various spin-offs, cartoon appearances, the infamous TV pilot, and much more. So join me in an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we celebrate your favorite JLI members, such as
Martian Manhunter,
Batman,
Dr. Fate,
Black Canary,
Fire,
Ice,
Maxwell Lord,
Oberon,
Captain Marvel,
Rocket Red,
Captain Atom,
Mr. Miracle,
Guy Gardner,
Booster Gold,
Blue Beetle,
Nort, and many, many more. Justice League International, Blahaha Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Want to make something of it?
All right. We are back with Debbie Woodham and Amazing Spider-Man 394. And she's about to go into the hardest part of her entire day because we're getting to the part where she's going to have to tell us about the story. And for those of you who are like, 394 sounds vaguely familiar, as I mentioned in the intro, it is smack in the middle of the clone saga for Spider-Man, often thought of as one of the most confusing Spider-Man stories. Now, before we get into that, though, like I said, this is the October 94 issue. It was probably more on sale in the summer of 1994. Debbie, what were you doing in the summer, fall of 1994?
Woo!
It's just a tip to the readers, in case you figured out earlier, Debbie's a little older than I am, just a little. We won't reveal her age.
Had to throw that in there.
We won't reveal her age, but she is, hey, the fact that she's still whooping me mercilessly on the racquetball court. But what were you doing in the summer fall of 1994?
Well, I know I was in Atlanta, Georgia. I was hanging out with a lot of people playing racquetball, as a matter of fact.
That makes sense that you would do that all the time.
I was working for an engineering firm and dating someone who was leaving to move to California, and I was actually happy to see him go. And I don't remember a whole lot else.
That poor bastard didn't know what he was missing out on.
That's right. But yeah, I mean, just kind of hanging out. I mean, I wasn't dealing with comics or anything like that, I can tell you, but I was just sort of doing my own thing. I wasn't married. I had just started a new job, I believe, with the engineering firm, and was just kind of living life, having a good time.
Well, you know what? We have something strangely in common for the summer and fall of 1994. I actually, brace yourself for this, was not really doing comics at that time either. I'm a little younger than you. I was in high school. I was a senior. I was starting. Don't get upset about it, Dave. I was starting senior year, and I was at that point in my life where I still liked comics. I didn't like shun comics or anything, but like when you're a senior boy in high school, you know, girls are your main focus, and so busy with school activities and stuff that I was away from the comic book world for a while. In fact, I didn't even know about the Clone Saga until I got to college. I got back into comics in college, thanks to my friend Delvin. He's like a drug dealer. He pushed it on me, and then I got hooked. But then I had to kind of go back and learn about the Clone Saga. And man, it is a hot mess. And speaking of the hot mess of the Clone Saga, this is the part of the show where Debbie does her best job to describe the plot of issue 394. So, Debbie, what's your best description of the story and plot of issue Amazing Spider-Man 394?
Okay, Spider-Man was cloned, but the way it starts, I'm not really sure if it's actually Spider-Man or the clone.
Welcome to the entire Clone Saga storyline. Go on, I'm sorry.
He seems to in his mind, be a bit confused about who he is and the feelings he's having, and there's a certain person called May Parker that keeps coming to his mind. Anyway, he's struggling with all of that. And then somewhere in there, some person named the Traveler comes into the picture. And there's some guy called Edward in a building. And the Traveler comes in. And this person, Edward, apparently is possessed, I guess I would say. I'm not sure if that's a comic book word. But I would say the guy was possessed. And there's some psycho evil something that's gotten a hold of these people. So anyway, but the Traveler appears to draw that out of this person. Mm-hmm. And then there's some chick named Chakra that comes in. And I'm like, I have no idea where she came from. It's like she lands out of the sky, I guess. And she does something to this dude. But somewhere in the mix, Traveler says the guy actually has a good heart. So it's almost as if something's happened to him and you're not really sure how or why it's happened to him. But this is where I got a little confused too, because Traveler kind of came across as a good guy in that scene, but I'm still not convinced he is a good guy.
Yeah, I don't know
should I continue? Because this had several sections, and it would start over with a new section. So that kind of sums up the first section.
Sure. What happened in the next? Just kind of continue in like book report format. So I guess what? Next we see Spider-Man, like, if I'm not mistaken, he's like in Ravencroft Institute, just like running around the Institute looking at institutionalized people.
This part's a little bit of a blur, but he seems to be somewhere in an asylum, I guess, and he's kind of climbing the walls, kind of getting a little out of control, I guess you could say.
He seems agitated.
He's on the ceiling. He's kind of talking a lot about heroic struggles, and he seems to be believing there's more to it than, I don't know. It shows this person that's pretty frightfully scary, and he's seeing him, and he's saying that his mind is empty. Apparently, he's been duped, or messed with psychologically.
That's the chameleon who has the power to look like anyone, and he's obviously sort of like lost his rocker, doesn't even know who he is anymore because he's been the identity of so many people. I think that's what they're getting at. But yeah, I could definitely see where that's confusing. Just move along. So, and then he checks in on another villain, right? Carnage. I think that's Carnage.
Yeah.
Just another crazy guy in the institution, and like you said, I guess he's going through his struggles. But anyway, this is your take, not my take. Whatever you think is.
He's still struggling with the whole cloning thing. It's kind of weird because there's these eyes at the bottom of the page, this man's eyes on several. I can't figure out whose eyes they are, but anyway.
You're right. At the bottom of like every page,
he says red eyes. Like the beast, the demons, the mirror. And he's like, he's like haunting Spider-Man, I guess. But anyway, a lot of this just seems to be a lot of mind twisted stuff about, Carnage and this man who seems to have nothingness in his brain. So he's just processing a lot of crazy people that I guess have been messed with psychologically, or superheroes that have been messed with.
Those are actually all villains, but you're not expected to know that, obviously.
And
I think from there we actually cut to one of the scenes in the story that actually kind of is grounded more in reality. It makes more sense. We get to see Spider-Man's wife, Mary Jane, having a discussion with her mother. Is that right?
I believe so. Yeah. And I'm glad she told me that was his wife, because I'm not sure I got that from the storyline. Anyway, so that helps me make more
sense.
Dang
it, I gave her too much information. Yeah,
that's okay. So anyway, Spider-Man's still just struggling with all these millions of thoughts, and he says they're like insects in his brain, and I think they're like insects in my brain too now. No soul left to love you, blah, 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 blah. But then it flips over to Mary Jane, who I know now is his wife, and her mom is encouraging her to go see somebody. So she's at the LaGuardia Airport, and Mary Jane doesn't really want to go. She's resisting the idea of going. There's something that's pulling her back, like she needs to stay, and her mom keeps saying, well, but you also need to take care of you, Peter needs me.
Yeah, that's Peter. That's
Peter Parker.
Her husband. I misled you a little bit, and that's my mistake. And I'm going to throw in a wrench more into what you've already got. That's her aunt. That is her aunt Anna. Her aunt raised her much like Peter Parker's Aunt May raised him. That's the May
Aunt Parker. Anna. There it is.
Yeah, that's the May Parker that Spider-Man keeps thinking about. That's his aunt that he loves dearly because she raised him, and then Aunt Anna helped raise Mary Jane. I can't remember who she's encouraging her to go.
Somebody, I think the name was Gale. I'll call you when I get to Gale's. That's what she said.
Okay.
I'll call you as soon as I get to Gale's. So I'm not sure who Gale is, but she kept questioning whether this was the right thing to do. Mary Jane did.
It's all a matter of whether or not she's going to stay with Peter or go bridge some other problem. I can't remember rightly, but at least it wasn't terribly confusing, right? We kind of understood.
Actually, that was a little bit more normal behavior, where you're getting on a flight, you're struggling with whether you should go, you got stuff emotionally pulling you back home. So all of that was pretty reasonably normal. And then you see the moon in the sky with the plane, and and the aunt is watching the flight take off. And then it bounces back to Parker. He's looking at his, I guess, Aunt May in the hospital bed and wondering if he's giving her the right care. And then he just struggles and struggles. And the doctor comes in and says she feels like she knows him already based on speaking to his wife. And he says, you have no idea. You don't know the half of it. And then suddenly you see Spider-Man on the wall again. And
well, I think in the hospital room, I think that's actually the clone. I think that's Ben Reilly, the clone.
Oh.
Either that or that's really Spider-Man, and the one we see in the Institute is the clone. It's so confusing. But yeah, one of these guys is a clone, and one of these guys is the real Spider-Man. And at this point in the story, I honestly couldn't tell you which is which anymore.
Then I'm not crazy.
No, he's not in two places at once. One of them is the clone, and one of them is Peter Parker. And I'm not sure which is which. You're not crazy. This is a tough storyline. But anyway, I think you're getting close to the end of it.
Yes.
I'll let you bring it home.
Well, Spider-Man's got all this whacked out stuff. Well, I guess if it's Spider-Man, he's got all this whacked out stuff. You know, alone, alone, alone. Your aunt's dying. Your wife's gone. You're faceless. Your parents are dead. You're insane. Blah, 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 blah. But then he feels somebody watching him, and he asks him to leave him alone. They're laughing. He hears voices. He says they're talking about him. And all you see is what looks like a Darth Vader without a mask. It's like a shadowy figure that's in a dark black cape, but he looks like a ghost, very ugly. But I don't know who that is. However, I can't help but wonder if it's not Traveler. But
his name is Scryer, and I don't know who he is a lot either, so don't feel bad.
Okay, and he's like, why are you doing this? Why are you harassing me? So suddenly, Traveler's in the picture again. Yeah, Traveler's got Spider-Man by the neck. So, you know, and there's a struggle going on, and you know, it's Traveler saying, you're unaware of the truth's inside, and, you know, it's just this ha-ha-ha-ha.
He laughs in his face.
And Spider-Man's struggling, and then you hear stop, stop from Spider-Man, and then he's like, you can't do this to me, you don't have the right, and then there's kaboom, coom, ba-boom, ba-boom, and then he's like, I'm a man, and I'm not a joke, and I'm not really sure what's going from there. Oh, yeah, it keeps happening. And then Traveler says he's an utterly broken man. And then you see Spider-Man holding his hand in his head, his head in his hands. And
like
Traveler
like a broken man.
Yeah, like a broken man. And Traveler's saying you should embrace the chaos. Then try to uphold some illusion. Exactly. Exactly. There's actually a lot of true reality components to this. And then there's Judas. He was, oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, now the shadowy figure, he was not what you expected. He's saying that to Traveler. And then he says, what now, Judas? The inmates die as you promised. So there's something going on between Judas and the Traveler.
It might be the same. His name might be Judas Traveler.
Oh,
I think that's right. Again, okay. This is a highly confusing storyline. It was just half the fun of throwing. I'm throwing Debbie into the deepest end of comics possible, and she's doing a good job with it. So I think that's Judas Traveler, and he's talking with that Scryer guy. That,
yep,
as you aptly put, Darth Vader with no mask on. That's a good description. And they've not to take it from you. It looks like they've left Spider-Man just a broken man. He's just laying there, and I honestly really don't know what happens in that next panel, because like Traveler basically waves his hand and the broken door goes back to fix. Spider-Man's not even there anymore. Like it's like he's waved his hand and it's all just gone away.
Yeah, that's
strange. And I have no clue what's going on. I've read comics almost my entire life and this storyline is so tough.
Yeah, but I think he called that shadowy figure Scryer.
Scryer.
Yeah, okay.
His name is Scryer.
So now we see Aunt May in the hospital bed again. So it's like the Spider-Man figure is all cleaned up. And now we're seeing the person dressed in normal clothes, which I guess we're thinking is the clone.
Possibly the clone, yeah.
He's in the hospital bed with his aunt, in the hospital room with his aunt May.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chakra, that
Chakra
chick appears.
Chakra chick shows up again. She's good at random pop-ins.
Yeah, and she says something about you have a choice from Traveler. And, you know, Parker's like looking at her like, how did you? And she's like, just don't worry about that. And then something about say nothing, ask nothing, just listen and consider your double, your rival will die by my master's hand within the hour. So she gives him an option and says, let Spider-Man die and you can have the life, the identity you have dreamed. have hungered for during your long years of exile, or come with me to Ravencroft and risk your own life. So now Spider-Man is left with a dilemma of what he should do to save the one man in all the world whose death would set you free.
Yeah, I think basically what she's saying is, you know, you're this clone, and if Spider-Man dies, then you can sort of step in and take over his life, you know, because you being this clone, you sort of led this listless life, and you can have his life. I think that's essentially what she's offering him.
Okay, so that's a brain twister.
Yeah.
The whole thing's a brain twister.
And then it ends on a weird note. You see Spider-Man, and I guess we're to believe he's in Ravencroft. He's locked up. He's got shackles on. Like, maybe he's an inmate of the institution. Maybe all this happened in his head. I don't know.
But notice he's always in his Spider-Man outfit, and he's always in...
Yeah,
I don't know.
The clone is always in like street clothes, and then Spider-Man's always in Spider-Man gear. He's never unmasked. So yeah, Debbie actually got the deluxe copy of 394. It's a flip book, and in the back it's got. I'm not forcing her to go through another story. In the back it's got some informational stuff, and it's got a short story about like the clone dealing with the Jackal. She read it and she was like, "How does this connect to this story?" I mean, you can imagine. Anybody who knows comics and knows the Clone Saga kind of can imagine what Debbie has just gone through. She's gone through her own personal Clone Saga.
I'm exhausted.
In one issue. And she was a super, super good sport about it. What I like to ask, now that we've gone through the plot summary, just given what you've read, total guesswork, what event or two do you think kind of may have transpired before this issue happened? Like, what do you think happened before you came on board? Vague guesswork.
I'm thinking some bad guy somewhere got a hold of Spider-Man and obviously cloned him.
Mm-hmm. I think that's accurate.
And I'm not sure that person seems to be out there wreaking havoc with a lot of stuff. So but that's about all I can figure.
That's fair.
Yeah.
How do you think this story arc will end?
Spider-Man's got to win.
Well, you got to
win. The real Spider-Man's got to win.
What do you think will become of the clone?
I think the Traveler and whatever that other dude's name was.
Scryer.
I think they'll lead him to his doom.
Oh, okay. So you think the bad ending for the clone. That's not a bad guess either. If I remember correctly, I think they did kind of do away with him. I think they eventually did. So confusing. Anyways, where were we? Yes, we're going to talk about just some characters real quick. I'll start. This is a game we like to play called What Powers Do You Think They Have? We'll start off easy. Spider-Man, what powers do you think he has?
Well, I know he can connect himself to walls and buildings.
Stick to walls.
And leap because of that. And I don't really know beyond that.
No, it's not bad. I mean, yeah, he's very agile and stick to walls. He's very strong.
Yeah,
very strong, and he's got the spider sense that warns him of danger. Mm-hmm. You don't really get to see that much in this episode. In this particular issue, all she really got to see was him kind of crawling around and slowly losing his mind, and he sort of punched Traveler a lot to like no effect, which is weird because Spider-Man's crazy strong. So a couple more challenging ones. There's a few other handful of characters in here that I just want to. Judas Traveler, you've already kind of talked about. We're both completely unclear on what his powers are. What if you had to guess?
He's Traveler? Got the power to draw some kind of stuff out and maybe put some kind of stuff in to their heads, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. That's which kind of leads us into Chakra. Apparently,
is Chakra
communicate over distance?
Seems like good karma or something. I'm not sure. but then again, she seemed a little, I don't know. Chakra's very confusing. But she's a little witchy. I don't think she can be trusted.
Yeah, no, that's probably a fair assessment. And then we talked about Scryer. That was the guy all in black with the white skin.
Scryer's just bad news.
Yeah, he's like just a guy. He's a lurker, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know what his powers are either, to be honest with you. And I've been in this for a while.
To just show up and look really ugly right now.
The only other kind of, we got a brief glimpse at a character in the beginning who was like in a fedora and a jacket. His name was Mr. Nocht. I got nothing on Mr. Nocht. To be honest with you. But we did see, I remember at the beginning you talked about how he had that guy, his name was Eddie, and he kind of, you said he possessed him. He brought out Eddie's dark form, which was the vermin. Any guesses as to what the vermin's powers might be?
He brought out the vermin out of Eddie.
Yeah, remember that was at the very beginning of Flipback. He had Eddie, and then he brought out Eddie's sort of evil form. That's Eddie's form as a villain.
So I'm wondering what his powers are.
Yeah, just a guess.
He's really strong.
He's fairly strong, yeah.
I don't know. I feel like he could penetrate you with his eyes.
He's got those red
maybe
eyes.
Maybe cut you in half or something.
Yeah, he's very, just basically like an animal, like almost like a caged rat. And you're right, he's very strong and very feral is kind of his thing. He's been in a lot of, he's a character I do know. He's been in a lot of Spider-Man stories. Along with, we had a brief glimpse at, and I'm flipping over the pages for Debbie here. Well, we did see the chameleon, and we can tell that he's a shapeshifter. And then we saw Carnage briefly. He's another big-time Spider-Man villain. Any guesses as to what his abilities are? They don't show you much in there.
Fire? I don't know.
He looks like a fire. You're right. He looks like a fire guy. But now he's like he has very, very similar powers to Spider-Man. Now, follow me on this. At one point, Spider-Man had a costume. Okay? His costume was actually an alien being.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Don't look at me like I'm crazy. His costume was like an alien being, and Spider-Man found out that it was a parasite that was affecting him, so he got rid of the costume. The costume went to another guy named Eddie Brock and became a villain known as Venom. Like, the costume wanted its revenge against Spider-Man for rejecting his costume. I know.
Wow.
For rejecting him. And then the costume spawned off like a child of itself, like, because it's an alien, that's how it reproduces. Like a piece of it came off to become another new costume alien thing, and it combined with this guy over here, Carnage. Carnage was like this serial killer, mass murderer, really bad guy. So when the alien sort of infused with him, it became very, as you can see, demonic and powerful and very scary. So yeah, welcome to the world of Spider-Man, Debbie.
Very interesting.
You jumped in all the way into the deepest.
Ooh, yeah,
and you did so like a champ, though. In the story, did you have a what was your favorite part of the story?
Well,
so much to choose from, I know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I kind of liked it when Traveler seemed to draw something out of Eddie.
Oh, the vermin. Yeah.
The vermin.
Yeah, pulled the vermin.
I kind of liked that. But I also, I don't know, I kind of liked the human side of Spider-Man.
Yeah, like when he's in the hospital.
Yeah, he's thinking about his family and his loved ones, mm-hmm. and, you know, the struggle he's having with all of that and how he can help his Aunt May. And I kind of like that. Yeah. That kind of personalized a little bit. But.
And that's really the secret to good comics is that personalization and characterization. If we're very honest with ourselves, comic books are really nothing more than soap operas with superpowers.
Yep.
They're all about relationships and how the superpowers kind of affect them. There's always action and adventure, but it really, good comics boil down to the relationship. So I'm interested. That's interesting that spoke to you, because I think that's what kind of speaks to all of us. Everyone likes good character development, whether you're in a comics or a movie or in a novel, that carries over. So that's cool. And I have this question I ask everybody on the show, which is particularly hilarious for Amazing Spider-Man 394. Here's the question as it reads in my script. Did anything leave you scratching your head?
Oh, my gosh. How many times was I allowed to scratch my head is the question.
I'd scratch all the way down into my brain if I could on this.
But you know what I'm realizing, too, as you sort of inform me of what I'm seeing, is that if you don't pay a lot of attention to a whole lot of detail in these, like, images.
Panels, right.
Then you miss a lot. So I may not have studied the panels as in-depth as I should have, because the more you talk about it, the more I realize there's stuff I didn't see that was supposed to speak to me.
Yeah, you know, learning how to read a comic is difficult if you've never read one before. Like, what do I need to pay attention to and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So no, I track you on that. It makes sense. So yeah, as far as head scratchers go, this whole dang storyline is a head scratcher. That's for sure. All right, I'm going to give you a reprieve. We're not going to have to talk about the story anymore. We're just going to talk purely about the artwork.
All righty.
Flipping over to the cover. Covers are supposed to speak to you and grab you and sort of summarize what you're about to read. When you looked at the cover, what were your first thoughts and impressions?
Well, I feel really bad for Spider-Man because he looks pretty battered and beaten. And
yeah, he does.
Kind of hanging limp in the hands of Traveler, so it's looking like he's not going to win that fight. So I have to guess that's the first thing that jumps off the page to me. And then, of course, you see the the clone who's in, you know, normal everyday clothing, and he's kind of looking up, and it's sort of like I'm trying to figure out exactly what he's thinking and where he fits into the picture.
So that summarizes the story nicely. We've got a defeated Spider-Man, which we saw in the book. We got a very empowered traveler who was empowered throughout the story. And then you've got, like you said, you see the clone back there, and you're not sure what his designs are. And in the story, we don't know what his designs are. So Mark Bagley, he's the artist on this. I think he did a good job capturing the essence of the story on the cover. Do you agree with that?
I do.
Words in your mouth. But
nope, I agree. I do agree.
What's your favorite part about the cover?
That's interesting. I kind of like the look of Traveler.
Yeah, Bagley really drew a great. Do you mean like his overall outfit, or like his facial features, or just the whole?
Actually, both. Yeah. I like all the detail. He's got stuff around his neck and around his hands and his arms and his waist, and it seems like there's a lot of detail. Buckles on his boots, and it's just very, very defined. Yeah, what you see.
Mark Bagley is a very top tier Spider-Man artist, very well thought of by the fan base in general. And yeah, he's hitting a home run here. Like you said, crazy good details on Traveler's costume. Even like beaten, broken Spider-Man looks good for that. His torn outfit, and
it gets the message across.
It does. He does a great job of capturing the essence of the issue. Moving on to the interior art, which was also done by Mark Bagley. Do you think art wise? Again, you don't have to worry about what's going on. Start just art wise. Anything kind of stand out to you? Like, did you look at a page or a panel and go, like, wow, that's really good, or did you look at a page and panel and go, I have no idea what's going on here. The art is totally distracting me.
Well, you know, I'm a moon girl. I like the moon and the sky. So all of the images that showed the sky, and there were several, because the clone's looking into the sky over a lot of high-rise buildings, and also Aunt Anna, I think it was, and Mary Jane, right, when they're at the airport and she's flying away. Oddly enough, I actually liked those shots of the sky and the moon and the individuals looking up, seeing the plane fly off, the stars, the moon, I just like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's basically like a six-panel set of the plane taking off, and Aunt Anna looking at the moon as the plane goes by the moon, and then it cuts to just the moon, and then it kind of zooms into the moon, and then uses the moon as its transition point to go back to the clone, or maybe it's not a clone, who knows, in the hospital room with Aunt May. So I think it's neat that you picked up on that, and that it's not necessarily terribly demanding work as an artist, but it's fantastic visual storytelling with transition.
Yes,
and that's something that's often forgotten. We think about comic art, we think about those dynamic pages where Spider-Man's knocking out the Green Goblin over a two-page spread, but like simple stuff, beautiful transitions like that, they matter, and they matter to an outsider's point of view, like Debbie. Debbie has never read a comic before, but she gets that transition.
Yeah, I think that's words cool. There, just images.
No words, just images, and it worked. Yep. So kudos, Mark Bagley, and I'm sure that the writer, which I think was J.M. DeMatteis, wrote this issue. He probably had that in the script for that transition. So good job, creative team overall. Any other major impressions on the interior art? Anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, it's just incredibly colorful, incredibly detailed. It speaks to you like crazy with the facial expressions, and I just think it's exceptionally good art, just exceptionally good. It's quite busy, but I think that's typical for a comic book.
Yeah, especially like a Spider-Man comic. It has a lot of dynamic range. I'm glad you mentioned the color. Colorists are often overlooked in the comic book industry.
Really?
And the colorist did a great job of just putting a lot of vibrancy into the issue. And you really need that for a Spider-Man book. Spider-Man book needs to have a lot of pop to it. Even when they're depressing and confusing, like this one.
Yeah, the expressions are awesome. They really communicate.
Facial expressions are a tough thing to master. And,
yes.
And Bagley's got it down. And it's hard to do a lot of good facial expressions when you're doing Spider-Man, because he wears a face mask all the time. So you have to also convey a lot of emotion through a mask, like through body language.
Yeah, hands. I noticed that with the hands of Spider-Man. His hands speak a lot.
Okay, that's a good point.
Yep. They speak to what he's experiencing because you can't see his face.
So there you have. I have Debbie's outlook on the art of the book, the rather confusing story. Now we're going to go into something much simpler. We're going to kind of take a look at the time period from the ads point of view. I asked Debbie when we first sat down, I said, you know what, ads kind of grabbed you. And she said, frankly, I was so mired up in this story, I wasn't really looking at ads. And so we just kind of looked at the ones that jumped out at her. And she spotted two ads that kind of jumped out at her from the 1994 time frame.
Yeah.
One of which, the first one you noticed was on the inside of the front cover.
Stridex. Acne medication.
Acne.
That was really popular back then.
Yeah, I remember Stridex was, the acne medication was big in the mid-90s especially. And as you can imagine, I mean, you've been in training and corporate big business and all that. You can imagine that, you know, comic books in the mid-90s are very, very appealing to what, like teenage boys especially.
Yeah.
And so what better product to push than an anti-acne cleansing?
Good point, yep.
And as a teenage boy, I did use Stridex when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And now, I don't, I mean, it's a unisex product. Did you ever use
Stridex? Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So yep. So it was a product that I didn't, you know, as a teenage boy, I thought I was the only kind of person buying it. So apparently, ladies are using it too.
It's a really good product. I do not know if they still make it.
I don't know. I have never looked into it.
I have not had a need to look in recent decades. Thankfully,
I walked away. Yes, yep. I walked away from Stridex in college, and I never looked back.
Exactly. Yep.
The other ad that Debbie picked out that kind of grabbed her attention is just kind of amusing.
Garfield.
It's Garfield.
Ravioli. Garfield's eating ravioli.
Ravioli. They're plugging Garfield ravioli and Stridex in the same issue. Two very non-related products.
Yeah. Wow, he's even asking what's in the White House in one of these.
Yeah, he's
Garfield's in front of the White House.
He's asking what's in a submarine, what's inside of a baseball. It's like Garfield's like trying to like broaden his educational horizon whilst eating ravioli out of a can that has his own picture on it. That's got to be a freaky thing to do. That's how Chef Boyardee always felt when he ate his own stuff out of a can, I imagine. But yeah, I mean, Garfield's well known for loving lasagna, so it would make sense that he would also love that. Were you much of a Garfield person? Did you?
I liked Garfield a pretty good bit. I liked his attitude. He was just such a dude.
He's a fun, newspaper comic strip, you know, not comic book. Like, I'm sure he probably had a comic book here or there over the years, but he's a newspaper comic strip written by Jim Davis out of Muncie, Indiana. I used to live there when I was a little kid. He was like our famous, like, Jim Davis lives here. So yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So Garfield and Stridex is what grabbed Debbie's attention. All right. We're going to take one more podcast promo break. And when we come back, we'll get Debbie's final verdict on Amazing Spider-Man 394. We'll be here on the other side of this podcast promo.
Hello, everyone. My name is Pat, and I'm the host of a new podcast called The Long Box Crusade. A while back, my wife said to me, "Why do you keep buying more comics? I bet you have not even read all the comics you have already." Well, she's right, but let's keep that between you and me. So I took her up on the challenge to read them all. I decided to read my collection of comic books in chronological order by the issue's cover dates. I wanted to relive their adventures and bring back the memories I had of my childhood in the late 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond. My collection has been stashed away in over 20-plus long boxes in the basement. I'll leave it up to your imagination as to why I cannot have them on display upstairs, but that's a different story. The Long Box Crusade podcast will be of recaps and reviews of the issues in my collection in a fun and friendly way. You can find the podcast at longboxcrusade.com. I hope you will join me on this crusade to read them all.
We are back. I hope you enjoyed that podcast promo for whatever it was you just heard. I don't plan far enough ahead to know which ones I put in there. But if I put it in there, that means it's a pretty good show that I enjoy. It's someone who has supported me in the past or has at least entertained the heck out of me. So whatever that promo was for, you should totally listen to that show. Okay, we're back for the final part, the wrap-up with the lovely Debbie. She is going to give us her final verdict on her first step in the comic world, which was a very deep one. Middle of the Clone Saga, Amazing Spider-Man 394. All right, Debbie. On a scale of 1 to 10, How well did Amazing Spider-Man 394 draw you into the Spider-Man universe?
Definitely an 8.
Oh, a higher mark than I would have thought. I thought the confusion would have kept you out, but the confusion added to the intrigue, maybe? I don't know. You tell me.
I'm no doubt intrigued. Yeah, the confusion may have added to the intrigue a little bit. But, you know, there's such a human component in here. And I think that's what surprised me a little bit. I'm not necessarily a sci-fi person because I like true storylines and I like things that really relate to the real world and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But there was that component of it that really surprised me and actually captivated me as I read it. You know, I might find it a little easier to have one that sort of I'm starting at the beginning and I can track it all the way through. But I wasn't so put out by the fact that, you know, this one was jumping around or I was catching it in the middle. And it was probably because there was just, to me, such a good and evil component to it that attracted me. Mm. I thought that was really very interesting and appealing.
You've hit on an interesting point about sort of the humanity of it, the emotion parts, the parts that were grounded in quote-unquote reality, you know, like when the clone, we're talking about reality and clones in the same sentence, when the clone is at the hospital and Aunt Anna and Mary Jane are at the airport. And the reality and the humanity of it all, you said that was appealing to you. And what's interesting about that is Marvel almost invented that. Just to give you a quick background, like DC Comics with Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman sort of ruled the roost. Marvel Comics didn't come on the scene until the 60s. And if you go back and you look at Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, they're all like almost perfect people. You have this perfect billionaire. You have this perfect superpowered being from another planet. Yeah. And this perfect Amazonian woman who is a princess of an island. Like they're all extremely powerful. They don't have a lot of struggles. And that's what Marvel brought. Marvel decided to make comics that were more, quote unquote, grounded in reality, where people had real struggles. They focused more on character like Spider-Man. He was just a teenage kid when he first started, and he's had trouble making money to help support his aunt. He had like real person struggles, and I think that's interesting that it still carries through, because that was in 1960. I'm sure some nerds out there are mad that I don't remember. Spider-Man was like 1962-ish, and here we are. This issue's 30 years on from when it started, and they still have that. They still have the humanity. And that's, I think, what will always sell on Marvel books. And DC caught on to that, and DC tapped into that afterwards. But Marvel's really credited for taking superhero stories and sort of grounding them in quote-unquote reality. So that's cool that spoke to you. I guess the last question I have for you is just purely on an entertainment scale. On a 1 to 10, how much should the comic book entertain you?
I'd say probably another 8.
Wow, another high mark. Okay.
Yeah, it was entertaining. Okay. I had to take it. I had to pace myself because it got so confusing, yes. but it was still entertaining.
Yeah, I peeked behind the curtain. I probably gave this comic to Debbie like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I'd come in and every once in a while, and I'd see her just like reading a little snippet here and there. And she's like, "This is like she's digesting small pieces at a time." It is a tough read. I threw Debbie in at the deep end. She was a great sport about it.
It was fun.
So I want to say thank you for coming on the show and sure. opening up. You know, not a lot of people are comfortable opening up themselves in a completely new genre like this. I hope you had fun here.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure you're probably going to run out and look for Amazing Spider-Man 395 just to find out what happened.
Sure.
Okay.
Not sure.
I promise you, if I ever force you into the world of comics again, I will start you at a story arc in the beginning.
That's
I
won't cool. ever throw you That'll in. Work.
If you ever want anything like that, you let me know. But I'm sure you have probably plenty of other things to do. But again, Debbie, I want to say thanks for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, no problem.
This was fun.
You've been a good sport. And until next time, you guys out there, just keep reading, and I'll find somebody who doesn't, and we'll see what happens. Catch you next time, folks.
This episode's outro music is a jam called Hedge. This music and all other sound engineering for Comics with Normies is provided by musical genius Joe November. Be sure to check Joe out on Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud at Joseflin99. That's J-O-S-E-F-L-I-N-99. Joe November's got some amazing beats and a lot to share, so be sure to check him out.
As a reminder, folks, if you have any comments or questions, or if you just want to follow us on the social media, you can follow us over on Twitter at Normies Podcast, N-O-R-M-I-E-S Podcast. You can also follow me personally over on Twitter. I am at Yard Sale Artist. Or if you're more of a Facebook kind of person, you can follow us at Comics with Normies. That's our podcast page. Or you can follow me personally at Yard Sale Artist. Again, questions, comments, just want to be part of the show, let me know. I'm happy to read the comments and the questions that we get on future episodes.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.